Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
It's my great honor to have two of my most favorite people with me today. I have Sarah Feely, who is our Chief Learning Officer, calling in from Dallas, and our Chief Compassion Officer, Meryl Erickson, from talking to us from Skinny Atlas, New York. So my challenge to listeners is, it's not spelled like it sounds, but you should look it up. It's a beautiful So this is the first time I've got to have colleagues on the podcast. So welcome, Sarah and Meryl. So happy to have you.
Delighted to be here, Laurel. Thanks for having us.
So we're going to start with a little bit of your background. So I'd like to hear the short life story of Meryl Erickson and where she came from and how she landed at CLC, and then we'll do the same for Sarah. How's that?
Sounds good. All right. The short story is this. I grew up on a farm. No, I'm just kidding. I grew up in Central New York in the Finger Lakes region, and I went to Cornell University. And in conjunction with that, I also went to the Culinary Institute of America. And when I graduated, I moved out west. I spent time in Napa and in Los Angeles. And I didn't really mean to move home, but I moved home. And I guess I should say I didn't mean to stay home, but I got a job working for an organization called the Inns of Aurora, which is in the Finger Lakes, a luxury hospitality organization. And I worked there for 12 years. I had an incredible sort of young career as a leader, and I worked with incredible people. And in 2023, I decided I needed a little change. I have three young children. They are 8, 6, and 3. Was really trying to figure out the best way to be a great mom and also still do things that I love. And so at the time, Laurel and I were friends, colleagues, not colleagues yet, but friends, because we both went to Cornell, alums. We met through our alumni network. We had lunch together one day, and she became a little bit of a guide for me. And so when I decided to leave the Inns of Aurora, I called her and I was like, what do I do? I don't know. And she said, well, I want you to go through this program and give it a try, see what you think. It was called Dream Lab. It has a different name now. And through that process, I figured out two things. One, I love cooking and I like to teach cooking. And so I started a small company called Pink Pineapple Cooking, where I teach kids as young as 5. Up through adults in-person live cooking classes. And second to that, I got to work with Laurel. She invited me to join the Compassionate Leader Circle team. And I've been doing that for the last few years. I've made some amazing friendships and worked with some great clients. And along the way, I pulled Sarah into the mix, and she can tell you about her story. But that's sort of the, I guess, short. I don't know if it was short enough, Laurel, but
it was perfect. And I have a memory of, I was teaching a retreat for a group of executives, and we had a nice lunch at, I always forget the name of the spa.
Mirabeau.
And I just knew that we would be doing this work together, and we are. So it's such a pleasure. So Sarah, I'd like you to give us a little bit of background on you and also talk to us about your relationship with Meryl, as you tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm an only child to two amazing parents and spent my childhood playing sports and being really good at them. And I bring that up because it's an important foundation for where I am today. I ended up being, you know, basketball was my thing. And I ended up going to college on a basketball scholarship when I was 8 years old. I told my mom that's what I wanted to do. And I did not waver from that. for till I got it. That wasn't all it was cracked up to be in college. And I ended up leaving basketball. And it was a big part of my identity. And I didn't deal with that identity crisis until I was 35. And so anyway, stopped playing basketball, got into the restaurant business, moved all around the country as sort of a first tranche in my career. That's where I met Meryl in 2008 in Napa. We lived together for a while. I was in a major pickle and I had to move quickly from Orange County to LA. And she let me store my entire life's everything in her living room in boxes, wall to wall boxes. And so that was 2008, 2009. And I was in the restaurant business for a while and then pivoted away from that and got into executive recruiting with Korn Ferry and pivoted internally at Korn Ferry to do talent management. I was in my early 30s, was about to have my second child. COVID hit, went on furlough, job disappeared. And I was at this, again, sort of identity crisis, life crossroads of, I've done a lot of things in my life because they've fallen into my lap and I've wanted to be good at them, but not reflected on, did I love them? Did they give me meaning and passion? So very long story short, I ended up taking some time away from work, got my master's at Northwestern, got my coaching credential. I ended up having a third baby in all of that. And a few years ago, you know, Meryl and I had always stayed in touch here and there, but between six kids, you know, it wasn't weekly conversations. And I reached back out to her and I said, what is this amazing thing you're doing with this woman, Laurel Donnellan and CLC? Because what you're talking about and what you're doing and how you arrived, your journey, Meryl, of making the pivot from hospitality to what Laurel's doing was so planful and thoughtful. And I thought, I want to do that too. I want to work in this universe. And 2024, I've joined CLC. So I get to do what I love, coaching people and teaching people and helping people with you all, who I love too.
One of the things I look for in colleagues and facilitators that you both have is a beautiful transition stories, right? So we help people transition through our Purpose Lab or Dream Lab programs. And it's hard to teach that or facilitate that for others unless you have had your own pivot. So I'd like to hear from each of you. We could start with Meryl. We can remind people of what your cool title is and what you actually do at CLC and how you collaborate with Sarah.
Okay, my title is the best title that exists in the world. I'm the Chief Compassion Officer. And what I do is I liaise between our organizations and our company. And by that, I mean, I do business development. I manage client relationships once they're in the door, help them identify and understand what they need or their priorities are to improve their organization, their culture, their people. Then I facilitate with some of those clients as well. So, you know, it's sort of an end-to-end integration with a lot of them. You know, I sell to them, but then I carry them through the process until whatever engagement or experience has come to an end. Sarah and I work together on organizations, both profit and nonprofit, primarily. And Sarah's a real research expert. So together, we make a very good partnership in terms of data analysis and detail of what's happening in the world. And then how do we bring that into our clients to help them come up with solutions and new ways to think about their businesses? What I love most about CLC and our clients is that every person we work with is trying to make the world a better place. And whether that's for themselves, their people, their company culture. And so when I get on the phone or onto a call with somebody, it's not like I'm dragging going, I don't want to talk to these people. It's like genuinely, I want to help. And the person I'm working with or the organization has has beautiful goals. And so, you know, all of a sudden I'm surrounded by people who are like, we're trying to do better across all avenues. And how lucky am I to live that every day and to be working with people who have goals that are to make the world kinder and more full of love. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing.
Meryl, I want to add to that because plus 1,000. Yeah, I've been on calls with you with clients and you're an incredible listener. I mean, you're incredible in lots of things, but I mean, we both liaison with clients and organizations. And to your point, everyone's trying to make their world, their organization, their people's lives better. And they sort of know the what. And you listen, and I listen. And we say, well, let's get creative about the how, right? And so we do what we do well, but there's a real customization to it in connecting the dots for our clients who might not know the how. And you are very good at taking people through that journey. And I go, oh, you want to do something? Let me stick my head in a book in the corner and read about it and research about it. And then we come together and I think do some cool stuff together.
I really love the combination of the two of you. And I do appreciate that you have different strengths and interests and you bring together. But I think what you have in common and what we all three have in common is I like what Meryl said about we can only really help people that want to make the world better. And so we are a leadership learning solutions company. We are a media company, but we interview global leaders who are making an impact in their companies and in their communities. And we work with leaders who already are compassionate and want to help their fellow workers and leaders be compassionate leaders, which is a lot of what we do is common sense, but it's not common practice. So I also love the three of us, all three of us have a hospitality background because I think that level of service and high touch service is in our DNA and we bring that to our clients and we enjoy that. And we also really enjoy great food, which is another part of where we're going over our values right now. And I've been thinking about, can food be a value? Can hospitality be a value? So
you know what, Laurel? Maybe it's nourishment. And we could like put nourishment in there in some way. Okay. Because food, as we all know, is the most intimate way to care for yourself or someone else.
I think we just came up with a new value, Meryl. That was genius. That's fantastic. I'd like you guys, without divulging the confidentiality that we have with our clients, I'd like you to talk about a program you did last year together. It was a purpose lab. Everything we do is customized, and it was a very cool company that is changing the world. So talk to me about what that experience was like for you and for them.
How do you sum it up in this period of time? I'll preface it by saying this. If you want a tool, a skill in your toolkit, it's one thing to teach someone the tool of, say, public speaking. Great. But the work we do is really about mindset and self-awareness and personal epiphanies so that people come to demonstrate improved performance or increased skills because it comes from a place from within. And so what I mean by that is Purpose Lab. We did this really cool 10-week program with an ERG or an employee resource group or a group of sort of a common shared group, demographic group. It was a 10-week program. And our clients wanted to see improvements in certain areas and an increase in, I think, quality of work life for these people. And so we took them through a 10-week Purpose Lab, 12-part framework that was so powerful for me in my first year of really getting in this deeply of a self-exploration, going through someone's past, going through their present or current state, and then dreaming, being creative and visionary about their future. Every piece of the framework built upon the last to give someone a real, I think, authentic sense of self so that they could go back into their work world with greater confidence, self-awareness, a stronger voice. Not because we said, here's how you have a tough conversation, but what are the things underneath the hood that can bring greater self-awareness so that when you have, say, tough conversations, you come from a place of confidence and authenticity. It was a powerful learning opportunity for this group of people. You know, we really cohered as a group, and we saw people from week one to week 10, not to sound too cheesy, but like really blossom into themselves and take something away that was powerful.
I have a couple things I want to add. So it was a women's group, a women's ERG within this organization, and they're a remote company. So everybody is all across predominantly North America, I would say, because they have, North America, let's just say that. But they're across all time zones, you know, different priorities, and they're very siloed. And by that, right, they have departments that focus on one thing or another. And so one of the goals with this particular program was to unite across departments. And by that, I mean, how do we build a culture in a remote organization, people who maybe know each other, but are not utilizing one another from a support and a community standpoint? And so for this particular group, we launched this as an in-person live event. They have 4 quarterly in-person meetings. And so we launched in person, then we went online for the middle section, and then we closed in person. And so we got, you know, sort of a lot of different opportunity to engage with this group of people. But, you know, at the end of it, recognizing for some of them to see, I have this other compatriot who is in another state, maybe has similar responsibilities to me, maybe dealing with similar problems to me, but they're not in my chain of command. They're not in my team, but I could call them, right? And I could say, I need help, or I'm dealing with this problem, or can I bounce this off of you? I recall one of your superpowers or your strengths being X. Can you support me with this? And so helping them to understand that just because they're behind a screen doesn't mean that they can't be a community amongst themselves. And so I think that was one of the other things that they weren't sharing either too, like common practices that were working. Like in my team, we do this structured one-on-one meeting where we go through these 5 things. And then someone else is like, wait a minute, that's brilliant. Why don't we do that on our team? And so just like allowing space and time for conversation around creating community that is effective and helpful in a remote organization, I found to be extremely powerful.
Well, I know you're going to be talking to that client later today. What do you think? I mean, what I'm hearing is it really breaks down silos and creates deeper connections with your colleagues. What do you think the long-term benefits to the company will be from this program if you had to look into your crystal ball?
I think that there was a tremendous amount of confidence in contemplation that happened. And I think the benefit of those 2 things are a couple things. But one, being able to speak up, we heard countless examples from where we started to where we ended on people standing up for themselves, you know, asking for different responsibility, you know, changing something, asking for more money, whatever it is that was important to them, the ability that they went from, I don't want to do this, who I've had the conversation, actually I've had 4 of them now, right? It's like remarkable. And so I don't think that that's something that will get lost. And I think that was a real confidence builder that will support these individuals for their careers and the organization. And then contemplation, you know, I think is another one that really, I think will be lasting for them. It's a high performance company, right? They're going 1 million miles a minute. They're transacting all day, every day. And, you know, really encouraging, supporting and demonstrating how do we breathe, take a minute and just settle before we make some decision or respond or be aggressive or defensive, whatever. Just take a moment to settle into where you are. And it doesn't require 2 hours of meditation on a daily basis, but you know, how do you really bring yourself to a place of calm and cool in order to make smart and effective decisions? I saw those time and time again. Sarah, I'm sure you have some other thoughts, but those two really stand out to me, I think, as long-term impact for that particular client.
Another thing I would add is that, particularly for women, and the data around like underrepresented groups, is women included, is a need for increased agency in career and place and path within the organization. So we had a group of women who, to your point, Meryl, were having conversations they had been wanting to have, were thinking about their careers in terms of them in the driver's seat, right? What is it that I want? What is it that I want to go for? What did I A, not know about myself that I really wanted, or B, had a desire for, but I didn't know how to ask for, right? So people who are really there saying, I'm in the driver's seat of my career, particularly for women and underrepresented groups, is so powerful. And from that, you've got increased engagement, you've got increased developmental opportunities, increased, you know, retention. So I think like from a measurable standpoint, if you had this in more and more ERG groups across an organization, you would actually see measurable numbers in those areas.
You know, my background is being a buyer of HR consulting. So I've spent millions of dollars of my company's money before I had my own company on consultants, on programs, on design, on retreat facilitators, on assessments. But when I created Compassionate Leaders Circle 26 years ago in February, I really wanted a company that understood my needs or the client's needs and to build programs from there. So one of our claims to fame is we highly customize things. And Sarah, you're working on something new and customized right now, again, without divulging the client. I'd love to hear about the program you're creating and you're going to be delivering in 2 weeks, because I think that's a great example of customization and meeting the client where they're at.
So we've got a client who is having us deliver a 90-minute program to over 100 employees in a certain sort of band or responsibility area in their global company. And it's about, can I be specific?
About the content, because the content is available to everyone, because it's sure. We created it. We'll just hold back on who the client is.
Yeah. So it's about emotional intelligence and unconscious bias. I think we've got a really cool take on it. So our Compassionate Leaders Circle position on emotional intelligence is really, it's about compassionate intelligence, where, you know, they're sort of EI, which I'll call it shorthand. Emotional intelligence has been around for decades, and there's 5 main facets of EI. And our point of view is that compassion, which requires and includes the prevention and alleviating of suffering, right? It's not enough to just be intelligent about your emotions and the way you exist in the world, but it's undergirded by compassion, which is, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to be curious about your own thoughts, contemplative about your own behaviors, and take that intelligence and do something about it? And so we are leading a group of 100 leaders in a very cool reflective effort exercise around contemplating and becoming curious about their own biases. And so emotional intelligence, compassionate intelligence is sort of the foundation. And then we move up to talk about bias. And I think, you know, in the world we live in, unconscious bias training, I mean, it's fantastic, because it's everywhere now, and it's growing, but you can get a little bit of an eye roll from people like, oh, we're doing this thing again. Yeah. Someone's going to tell me I'm biased. Well, you know, what we're going to present to our client is that cognitive bias is a universal way that people like can process the information in the world, right? We have like millions and billions of information inputs throughout the day. And bias is our evolutionary way to like group information and make quick decisions. And so what we're going to lead these people in is an understanding of how biases work, and get people to really reflect and be contemplative about their own practices, how they can lead their teams, and have them make some commitments to make some compassionate change. We're going to do it in a fun, highly interactive 90-minute session, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it too. And it's so important. And it's important for all of us to just cop to, we're all biased. We all have biases, even if we don't know what they are. Meryl, I'm interested. We have a lot going on this year, upcoming, lots of projects you're working on. What are you excited about for 2025?
So many things, Laurel. That's like a very, feel.
That's okay.
I'm going to respond with two things.
You respond with the list if you want to.
As many as I want. I think I have two though. One is what is fulfilling to me is continued relationships with our current clients. And so opportunities to work again in the same spaces. One, it's very powerful within an organization. And two, my hospitality self wants to care and support people. And so having established relationships and supporting those to see them through their goals is exciting to me. So that is exciting. We have a lot of amazing clients, and I'm looking forward to working with them again in 2025. Second to that, I have a sort of a compassionate conversations concept that I really want to bring to life, and I think would be a great addition to our existing programming and also support clients moving forward. And so I'd really like to get that program really nailed down and feel like something that we are all ready to execute and sell. And so that's sort of ruminating in my brain right now, and I need to put pen to paper and make that come to life.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too, because we just did a survey with one of our biggest clients, and it's interesting how people communicate what they need, right? So some people kind of latch onto buzzwords from books or things they've heard in other classes. There's, you know, kind of a common theme of having difficult conversations out in the world. Maybe, you know, and it's such a negative connotation to communication. Like, you're starting with the conversation's going to be difficult. I like this idea of compassion conversations, because I think when we come from our hearts and integrate our heads with our hearts, everything's easier, you know? Yeah. Everything's easier.
It diffuses so much stress, right? When you can just be real with somebody and go, help me understand what's going on, right? How hard is it to say that? But people don't use those words very often. In any event, that's a very exciting thing for 2025.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I'd like, with all of my podcast guests, I like to ask each of you, we'll start with life lessons. So what is one life lesson you'd each like to share with our audience today?
I was really hoping we'd come back to this, because I realized I started off in my life story saying I was really good at basketball, and I never closed that why the heck that mattered. So I spent a lot of my life wanting to be really good at things, and I was good at school and I was good at basketball, and they became my identity. And so so much of my life has been about trying to be really good at something. And doing it to be good at it. And I didn't realize this till I was in my 30s. And never stopping and thinking, do I care about this? Does it give me meaning and joy and tie into purpose? And that's why I'm so keen on, it's a big part of my coaching practice and the retreats we do and our purpose lab and why I'm here, which is really getting tying to a greater sense of why. And so this idea of, and I call myself a reformed achiever. It's not that performance or achievement is bad, but it has to be aligned with your why. I loved basketball and it gave me a sense of why, but I took it too far in so many other facets of my life. And I made it just about the achievement and the next promotion. And we all know that when you go for this thing and then you get it and you're like, shrug, now what? You know? And so make sure you're connected to your why.
Thank you. Meryl, life lesson.
I'm going to use my garden as an example. I love to garden. It brings me a tremendous amount of calm and joy. And actually, the lesson is that it is wild in so many ways. And, you know, the weather changes. And if I plant things one way or one place, and then the next year they don't grow the same way. I mean, it's just sort of this constant, you have to live where you are at that moment in time. And, you know, often for me, I have to let go of like, there's 10,000 weeds. And I'm like, but there's also 10,000 carrots. So just like take the carrots and take the win. But I love the idea of being able to regrow and start fresh and try new things. And sometimes they fail and sometimes they blossom, and that all is joyful and very real to me. And I want to just slow down and not miss those pieces of my life.
Real quick, Meryl, I love that metaphor with the garden. It's so you. And you are such a joy-filled person. It's really one of your gifts.
So. Thank you.
Chef and a gardener and a great mom, right?
Try.
It's the hardest job in the world. And it's an honor to be working with women that are also, you're growing a company and growing great citizens of the future. So Sarah, leadership lesson for our listeners.
I feel the job of a leader is to get the most out of their people and to inspire their people. When I think about it in terms of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, maybe just focusing on Michael Jordan, it's like the best players make their teammates better. You, or leaders out there, often get to their roles because they're great performers, they're great engineers, they're great at what they do. And as soon as you step into a people leader role, it's no longer about them, you being this executor, getting it done. It's you being a leader. And there's a difference between being a manager and a leader. And so I think the great leaders, you know, my advice or my lesson is that leader as coach, leader as enabler of someone else is the number one role. And so if we can teach our leaders how to be coaches and how to cultivate the best in their people, then that's going to be, that's a different relationship with everyone. I mean, that's what makes it extra tricky. But if you can be a leader as coach, you're on the right track.
Thanks, Sarah. Beautifully said. Meryl?
I'm a strong believer in just being honest and courageous with your people. From a leadership standpoint, if you can be direct and clear with them and also kind at the same time, that will take you a very, very, very long way. It seems so simple, but it's hard to do that, I think, on the regular.
If you would like to connect with Sarah or Meryl, you can do that through our website, CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. It's been a pleasure being with you, and I most look forward to continuing collaborating and working with you both. I love you both. It was an honor to be with you today.
Love you. That was wonderful. Thank you for your time, Laurel.
Thank you, Laurel.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.